Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload once every week, once every other week, kind of depending upon the fight schedule or depending upon how busy I am. Also, the most efficient way to get the kickboxing podcast is to simply go to iTunes, enter Warman Kickfighting Show, or enter Lord Gaul into the iTunes search engine, and my show pops right up. So go ahead, get right back into things. Apologize for going a little bit later this time, but as a lot of you guys know, I moved to like my own gym before. I'd been working, I was working with Team Takedown as a striking coach. And then after that situation, I moved into another gym with my fighters until I could get my own gym home. And then I finally found the perfect location. And now the ins and outs that go along with, you know, running a gym is just driving me into the ground. It's a good problem to have, but it's definitely a busy time for me. So, but don't forget, or don't you guys ever worry, I love kickboxing. I still watch everything. I'm still a big student of the game. I'm still a junkie. I still watch every event that I possibly can. So I will be kicking you these shows on a regular basis. Also, thank you to everybody who sent me birthday wishes. I just turned 37 the other day. So I'm old and dying, waiting on Jesus to come and get me. So thank you again for all the followers and all the people who have been supporting kickboxing, Muay Thai, and let's get right into it. We're going to go to America. One of my favorite cards that Lion Fights put on in terms of their attempt to really bring in international talent so people can understand just how good some of the best fighters in the world are. But in this case, we also had some really good professional resistance, and that's always really, really important because they don't just want to have somebody, you know, a bunch of one-sided fights. And sometimes you do get them, like in the case of some of the fights I talk about in this card, it just happened because one of the athletes was far superior. But in some of these situations, you had some really, really good resistance. You had some really good fight back. So we'll go ahead and jump into the Lion Fight card that took place this past Friday on September 2nd in the Foxwoods, which is in Connecticut. So I won't talk about the first fight in the card. It's kind of more of a for the states thing. But internationally, Antonina Shevchenko takes out Paula Capucci in the unanimous decision after five rounds. Whenever you go against the Shevchenkos, I could probably tell who's going to win the fight within the first 15 seconds of the fight. If they get into any type of exchange, or if you find that you're looking for your offense, trying to find where they are, I usually go ahead and chalk it up that you're going to lose. Now, of course, it's easy to say that because, you know, they've got like a lot of success and so on. You know, very, very few losses between both Shevchenko's sisters. But Antonina, the older sister, a little bit more pop, the same quick left hand, same understanding of distance. They play with a lot of the same combos, same coach, of course. Antonina, the coach, is her husband. They play with a lot of the same offensive techniques, and they have the same kind of understanding of distance. But the killer, anytime I see anybody go against them, if they're trying to figure out how to hit them, if they're trying to figure out how to get in close, they usually lost already. If you don't come with an offensive aggressiveness, if you don't say, one of these is going to land, I'm just going to keep throwing them, you're probably going to lose the fight, like, and in a one-sided manner. It's just too hard because their vision's too good. They read too well. They've got their feet are really, really good, and they have a good understanding of separation. And what makes it worse is if you're not strong, you throw anything, any kick to the body, anything, you're going to catch it and dump you every single time. So what happened with Antonina was exactly that. She came out and executed offense the way she normally does. She kept running Paul into some clean, straight left hands. She hit in some uppercuts here and there. Body kick was on point. She wasn't as aggressive in the clinch with her knees, but she was very aggressive with the dumps. Paula, I can't even remember her coming off with too many clean scores because I think she was trying to find the right score. Sometimes people look for a certain offensive technique to get themselves into their offense, and in looking for that one shot, you never get yourself going. So I think she probably would have been better served if she could have had some kind of combination and hit a body kick in there, but Shevchenko was just so strong that she could just catch it and just dump her every single time. Rounds 4 or 5 in particular look like the same kind of round. Just a confused Paula not knowing what to do, her team kind of yelling for her to get going, to just kind of push the pace. But it's easier to say than, you know, when you're watching from the outside, because when you're in there and people, they don't move from you, they just move slightly to your left or slightly into an angle where you're pursuing, right where you think, I'm just far enough away to get them. I just got to get a little bit closer. And they have you thinking that for 15 minutes. The entire series of rounds would go by and you realize that you never let your hands go because you never felt you got them to stop enough, or you never felt you got them in a position. And once you did, you know, maybe you got them to the ropes or something like that, when you did throw out, you'd end up in the clinch and it's almost like you're starting all over. It's so tough to do when you're in there. A very, very clear, clean victory for the Lion Fight champion, Antonina Shevchenko. We move to the super bantamweight division, where Imam Barlow makes her U.S. debut as she takes on Jerry Seitz. First of all, shout out to Jerry Seitz. She took this fight on Tuesday, flew out on Wednesday, and fought on Friday. She is a veteran girl. She understands her offense. She's got pretty quick hands, and she's got combo to hand flow. The problem is Imam Barlow has been doing this forever, you know, and it's she came out. Imam Barlow was determined to dictate the fight with her body kicks, her pressure, and her ability to win in the clinch, because Iman is really, really tough in the clinch. I remember Tiffany Von Seuss, when she started to get, you know, in the beginning, when she get in the clinch, she didn't know what to do, as if they didn't train it. She kind of struggled with it. So she would either lose in the clinch to like a Alexis Rufus. And then later in fights, she had this technique where she would just bull you into the ropes until the ref like changed it, came in and stopped it. And then later, Tiffany Von Seuss developed a better understanding of scoring in the clinch. In particular, she'd be first while other girls were looking for perfect shots. Imam Barlow is probably the toughest person to do either of those three techniques to. She always pummels for the neck. She always turns you. And she knows how to whip the knee around from the outside. And if you're throwing your own knee, she knows how to shift weight and then get back into a position where she's scoring the dominant knees. There were several times where it looks like Jerry Seitz wouldn't be able to continue just because of how many knees she was taking to the body. But I'm telling you, every round, there was at least one or two moments where Jerry Seitz would put together a combination that was mean. And Imam Barlow, a lot of it she took on the glove. She took a lot of the spinning back fists in the glove. She's got really good defense. So like, if you watch Imam Barlow, if you guys wanted to teach someone how to have the right kind of hands up guard, Iman doesn't really parry a lot of shots, but when you deliver them, she almost always has her hands high, either hands, the way that you would teach somebody in the beginning, the way that you'd want them to keep learning. Because most people don't understand this. The reason why people drop their hands isn't because they're tired, you know, or isn't because, not always, it can be because they're tired. The main reason why people drop their hands is because they don't feel comfortable with their vision. So whether the punches are disrupting them or they don't feel comfortable finding their own offense, the main reason why people drop their hands is because of vision. And that's why you see some of the worst knockouts, or you see people play with Mayweather stuff and that kind of stuff, whatever. It's because they're trying to put themselves in a position of, when I hold my hands up, I don't feel confident with my own offense, and I don't feel confident stopping their offense. If I can see it, at least I can lean away from it. And of course, that's the end of your downfall. So that's why every coach yells to get him up. Iman's situation is, because she always has them up, whenever you do head kicks and stuff like that, whatever, she's always ready. So Iman came out, did a great job with the body kicks, with the knees, as I said before. Boxing's getting better. She's starting to have these really clean lands with her power hand. Jab is sneaking through really well. That's a part of her game that's developing, because she's been kickboxing, you know, for the last few years, and she hasn't even fought full rules Muay Thai except for like once, I want to say, in the last 2-3 years. But she's still the most active female fighter in the world. Good win here. And shout out to Jerry Seitz. They got to give her another opportunity. Jerry landed one of the meanest teeps you're going to see early in round one. She shot it at a very, very quick. Iman was like standing there. And Iman, you know, is tough as nails. Her head shoots back and then she puts her hands back up and back to business. But Jerry Seitz has landed a really, really big teep, even despite the fact that she was dominated in that round. But as the rounds went on, combinations, some people gave her the last round because Iman was definitely tired. After the fourth, and Jerry Seitz is, even though I didn't see her scoring, I did not give her the round, but I did think that her aggressiveness and her hand flow, she's the kind of person that you want to have. Where was she at when they were looking for opponents for Tiffany Von Soest around the weight class? Because she's a fun girl to watch. Like, she should have been a quick name to come up with. So, fun stuff for her. They got to use her again. She did them a favor, so they got to use her again. Next fight on the card, Tom Sitsung Pinyong gets a victory over Gaston Bolanos. And I mentioned this on Twitter. My favorite thing about Gaston in this fight is that, and in the last fight as well, is he's fighting Thais. He's fighting really good opposition that's beyond him. Gaston Bolanos and the way that, and same thing with Jonsi. Jonsi has no business fighting guys from the USA. And, you know, our guys in Canada, his kickboxing is superior as it stands. Now, there are a couple names that, you know, if they come back, you know, he could, if Shane Campbell gets cut from the UFC, if he returns to kickboxing in Muay Thai, I would like to see Jonsi fight him. That'd be fun. But for the most part, I look at him and I look at his skill set and I say, okay, you really did put on, you know, good fights, but those were like showcase fights where you got to do this awesome skill and kind of had the crowd like, you know, roaring and that kind of deal, whatever. You had these blowout KO victories. I don't want to see that every single day, you know, every single time you're on a fight card for the next 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. I would like to see you challenge yourself. And it's not like I had this conversation with him. In his mind, he wants to see how he does against the elite Thais. So they brought in Tom, who was, unlike the last Thai that he went against, Tom had some success and major stadiums in Thailand before he relocated out to Australia. This was a good match. Tom very, very slick. Smaller, clearly smaller than Gaston. And I think when Gaston revisits the fight, he'll probably, you know, just throw more offense because he's so much bigger and stronger. Tom was able to win those games in space. You know, his quick single strike, sometimes he'd throw two. His angle changes, his ability to catch the kick and return fire. You know, he threw a combination of three every once in a while, but usually it would just be like a slick two, like a switch dance, right hook to the head, switch kick to the body, or switch kick to the head. You know, low kick, then move. You know, some sort of counter where he would get in and then be gone. Gaston Bolanos just never got going, never got out of first gear. He tried a spinning elbow and stuff a couple of times, but Tom was quick to the score, and he just ducked underneath the technique. Nobody else was doing that. Everybody else sees the technique, they're leaning away. Tom sees the technique, he ducks. Circles are, he ducks, steps underneath, and then circles back to the middle and kind of makes some sort of movement to the crowd. He was the superior fighter, but if Gaston Bolanos is going to beat that kind of guy, he's got to feel that sort of level. So I talk about Paul Briggs a lot in this show. One of the most important fights that I've ever seen was a blowout. Paul Briggs was the champion of Australia. Then he goes over to Japan, goes against their world champion, and then he went to Thailand. And when he went to Thailand to go against Jamon, the champion at the time, he gets blown out with low kicks. And then afterwards, they put the interview on him. You know, their commentary saying, they're saying it's really good for him to get this loss, the kind of stuff, whatever. As soon as they interview him afterwards, he said, I needed to know how good I was because I beat the best in Australia and I beat the best in Japan. And he says, now I know that the best in Thailand are the best in the world. I wouldn't have known it if I didn't come here. So I know now this is the level that I got to prepare for. And that was a blowout loss. Tom did not blow Bolanos out. He just beat him clearly. And Gaston can now move from this fight and say, okay, this is what I got to do when I go against them. I can't let them breathe. I've got to throw more offense. Even if I'm not scoring, I got to throw more offense to stop them from throwing offense. I got to be a little bit meaner in the clinch. I'm a bigger, stronger guy. Maybe I play with the clinch a little bit more. When he reevaluates his fight and see what he does, sees what he has success with, then he goes out and he does better the next time. Maybe he beats the next guy. But the biggest key is it starts with taking these kind of fights. You do yourself no favor. So shout out to him and his gym, Fitzgibbons, you know, for lining him up with the kind of fights that are going to move his career. But it would have done him no favors whatsoever if he just came out there and had another guy who shouldn't have been in there with him that was happy to get a paycheck and get styled on. Good stuff, Gaston Bolanos. And my favorite performance on the card, Urina Bears against Angela Whiteley. Here's why I love this performance so much from Urina. Going into it, if you look at Angela's fights, I thought Angela was long enough, decent enough athlete, strong enough to possibly give Urina trouble in the clinch, because Urina Bears has struggled in the clinch before. Like, if you look at her fights with Cyborg, look at her fights, even some of the more recent ones or whatever, there's no pummel. She doesn't fight the arms. She doesn't, turn. She just kind of allows the clinch and waits for them to break it up because she comes from kickboxing. So she just kind of waits. So I was like, when she fought Uge from Italy, when Chantel got a hold of her and started working the clinch, everybody's like, if you've got a chance, it's here. Because Urena Barr is clearly not pummeling back. Clearly not fighting the arms. Clearly not, shifting weight or doing anything. She's just kind of waiting out for the ref to come, get back in space, combination low kick. Urena Barr Bears comes into this fight, and she has her kickboxing on point as usual. But the thing that surprised me the most is she's been putting in the clinch work. She has clearly been putting in the work. She's been learning it. She did not lose the clinch in this one. When Angela Whiteley got a hold of her and she scored a couple knees and she dumped Whiteley in the first round, I think it scared both of them because their corner is sitting there yelling to Angela, get her in the clinch and start bullying her. Because on film, that would have been the thing to try. But Urena said, because she was so, conscious of the fight, it's her biggest fight since the Cyborg fight. They put her in there. She said that she quit her job for 30 days to just focus on this fight, and it showed. She came in and she won in the clinch. She won, of course, in the kickboxing. Low kick game, always on point. Whiteley just never, first of all, Angela Whiteley, whether she needs a mind coach or whatever the case is, she was definitely nervous in round one, visibly nervous in round one. Didn't look comfortable at all. A little bit jittery. Maybe the stage got to her once she was there. Maybe she's like, oh man, there's the arena. Maybe she's like, there's the best in the world. Maybe that all kind of came into play on fight night, but it was so clear to me in round one that she didn't look comfortable. Like, she looked nervous. I think at some period of time later in the round, the commentary even mentioned it, but she did not look comfortable. But the moment she got in the clinch, so you're already nervous, you get in the clinch with Urena, and then she shows that she's the stronger of the two athletes. Very, very, very clear, strong performance by Urena Barrs. It's probably my favorite performance of hers. Kickboxing was on point. Low kicks, of course, always working. But man, Urena, it's improvement that I love to see. If you're the best and you're improving, that scares the world. So I mentioned it before when I talked about Tiffany Von Soest, how she always had the angles. She always had the low kicks. She always had, the KO power over the top, the spinning techniques. She always had that. But when you put her in the clinch, when she went against Alexis Rufus, she just looked overmatched and didn't know what she was doing. And then later, she started pushing people into the ropes to stop them from clinching her. And then later, when she's going against, one of the better clinchers, kind of towards the end of her career, she started going against better clinchers, I would say. And I thought that every time she got into those positions, she would be so active with the knees. Even if she didn't have the pummeling down, she would be first and she wouldn't let people control her as they're looking for the perfect score and they're trying to, move her. She would just start going to work and scoring offensively. And you saw the growth of someone who's already really hot. Now, of course, she was helped by she had some losses. The losses, of course, always motivate you. And in those losses, she struggled. So when she went against Kaylee Reese, she fell short. And when she went against Denise Kielholz, those were the fights that say, okay, now I got to turn around. Now I got to get better. Now I got to work on these skill sets. So then the next couple fights, she came out and she was better in the clinch, much better in the clinch. Enter Urena Barrs. She's already, comes out with the kickboxing game. She keeps winning these fights, and she's showing improvement. Nothing scarier, nothing better than for your skill set than having that happen. We're going to go ahead, and we're going to head to, let's see what I want to break down next. I will take us to, I'll just talk about the one fight. Zabit's, I was going to look at, there was another card that, another Akhmet fight show. I just bring this fight up particular because once upon a time, this guy used to be one of the better fighters in the world. And there were a couple fights on this card that's got some prospects that you just need to know. Zabit Samadov gets a first round KO victory over Kailan Morisanu. Anybody that saw this fight listed knew what was going to happen in this fight. Zabit Samadov is he is growing into a, he's a heavyweight, but he's really, really small for heavyweight. He's still agile. He's still got good speed. He can still move around. And he is a tough guy, but never a guy who I'd say top 10 in the world at any period of time in his career. But lately, because of these Akhmet fights, he's starting to put together a string of very, very good victories. Victory over Badr Hari, of course, we know about that. But this victory over Kailan Morsano, another guy who you'd expect him to just run through, he's always been good about letting his hands go in opportunities. So basically, he moves around technical, 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 big overhand shots. And that's how he fought heavyweights. As soon as he'd be technical, he'd move, he'd have you pursuing. As soon as you start like making a fight, Zabit Samedov starts to find you. Now, when he went against guys like a Tyrone Spong, you ain't gonna do that. Tyrone, he's too damn good. So as soon as he started throwing those shots, Tyrone's just clean, clean, block, block, counter, low kick. And it's just a clean one. Another things, one of the few things in, well, one of the many things in Tyrone's career that let me know how special he was when Tyrone went against other good guys and then those guys didn't look good. Zabit Samedov, when he went against Tyrone Spong, all of a sudden he didn't look good. Like, you're like, man, this guy's a whole nother level. But now Zabit Samedov has really grown in his skill set. He's really gotten better. Again, not really challenged here at this with the fights that they're bringing him. But I do like that he's winning them, that he's developing his brand, that he's known, he's a draw on the cards. His popularity stayed after the Badr Hari victory. I want to see good things from him. I'd like him to fight some of the glory opposition. Those guys need fights in the offseason. So, you know, I want to see how he could, and I know he can make their light heavyweight weight class. So it's like, if you're going to bring in a guy from Romania, bring in one of the Stoikas. You know what I'm saying? Start challenging yourself in that way. But good victory for him here. Roman Kryklia is probably the best young prospect in kickboxing right now. Just tall, KO pop. He gets a brutal KO over Colin George with the head kick. You know, that not only does it score, but it also kind of drags across the face. That causes a pretty bad cut. Roman Kryklia is the truth. Like, he is a very, very talented guy, tall. He's got good kickboxing skill set. He's one of those guys where I'm like, please keep growing as a kickboxer. I don't want to see you move into MMA. Not for a very long time. If you want to move to MMA in your 30s, I don't care. Right now, I like you as a kickboxer. Very talented guy. One of the reasons why Europe is always going to keep producing these guys. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but I mentioned it on this show before. Ryan Scalia wrote an article for Liverkick, and one of the guys they interviewed, he said, nothing's going to replace kickboxing in Europe. And it's not that MMA ain't growing. It's not that MMA ain't doing its thing and they're producing good MMA fighters there. But they have got some really good kickboxers. They've got some great kickboxing gyms and people who grow up in that system from jump. And they're still producing elite fighters all the time. So shout out to Roman Kryklia. He is a very, very talented guy. Again, Roman Kryklia. Go ahead and look that up. And look up that KO with George. It's going to be in my year and, you know, kickboxing highlight, of course, that I always do for the year because it's an awesome, awesome KO. Colin George, back to the drawing board. You know, he's had some tough fights, but he's losing to some pretty good guys. Kryklia, really, really good guy. And then I think he lost to Benjamin Adepuja before that. So Colin George is challenging himself. He keeps getting opportunities in Romania, whatever. He's a good-sized dude. He's just got to work on his kickboxing flow. And sometimes I think he's relying on getting into a spot where he can let his hands go and kind of land something significant, whereas people can beat him with kickboxing throughout the round. And then when the opportunity opens up, he lets it go upstairs. So Colin's working. Colin's working. He's trying. He's getting his opportunities. He's living the dream. But Roman Kryklia is one of the best prospects on the planet right now. Watch this kid. He's very, very talented. Terpey Tokayev of Russia gets a second-round KO over Sergey Gurr. I just bring it up to mention that Sergey Gurr is back in it. Sergey Gurr is one of the guys who, when I first got into kickboxing, he was this undersized, you know, I mean, he's fought lower than heavyweight, but he'd been fighting heavyweights. I wonder what he looks like now. I didn't even get to see this fight, but as soon as I saw that he was on there, I was like, how is he still out here fighting? Maybe the opportunity came. Maybe he wanted to get back in there and test himself again, but I just smiled to myself when I saw that he was back competing. He gets stopped in the second round, but, you know, hey, if you want to live the dream, shout out to you. Shout out to you. Going to go ahead and go to... what card is this? I will do... I don't want to do Glory just yet. I'll go ahead and break down Crush. I won't do all the Crush fights, just a couple of notables. I mentioned it before, Masaki Nori is the truth. He gets a KO victory first round, liver kicks over Peng Fei Wang. He's one of the best in the world, and he needs to be fighting the best in the world. Just that simple. Like he continues to, and he is fighting the best guys. He continues to impress me with his ability to, okay, I'm going to fight in the K1, you know, World Grand Prix at 65 kgs. When I'm not doing that, I'm going to fight for Crush. When I'm not doing that, I'm going to fight for, you know, whoever is given the opportunity for him to continue his kickboxing career. He's a prize fighter. And him with the brutal body kicks, he's always been that way. Peng Fei Wang, it just, the fight's over with before it begins if you can't stop that quick body kick. You've got to have some sort of counter to it. You've got to block and fire, or you've got to go with the tie check where you close the door or elbow to knee, as some of you guys know it to be. You've got to have that in your arsenal, or else you're doomed. Masaki Nori, too fast twitch, too quick, fires that kick too beautifully. He's one of the best fighters in the world. He's probably the number two fighter at 65 kgs in the world, but it did not go the way Wang was hoping it would go. I'm sure he wanted to win the fight, but I'm also sure he wanted to actually, you know, take it some rounds and see if his skill set holds up enough to give you confidence to go back in there. But when you get blown out, sometimes it's tough. Next fight I want to talk about is, they had an exhibition super fight that was just two rounds, and I wasn't able to see it. I've heard it pronounced in different ways. One time I heard it pronounced as it was a, you know, sportsmanlike sparring match. And another time, so I say both guys looked for opportunities to put series of offensive combos together just to kind of, you know, move work to the crowd. They said it was enough movement for the crowd to be okay with it. And I think that's an interesting way to break it down. But it's one of those things that a lot of people, when they saw it, they were like, wow, you know, that's a good thing that they would, you know, put the show on and look for a few moments for them to put combinations and kicks together. But the moment the fight was made, even when people heard the word exhibition, they knew that it wasn't going to be what they wanted it to be. They wanted the two best guys at, you know, two different weight classes to come together and let it go for real. If they ever do a super fight, I can imagine, I think even though he would clearly lose, I think that Takuro is brave enough to fight Kufertex without question. I think he'd do it. Like, he, you know, he's got that kind of confidence, that type of, you know, I won't call it arrogance or narcissism. I just think that there's just a self-belief in his ability to go in there and perform techniques, you know, let his hands go and really try to go after Ku. Because Ku's not the biggest guy. I'm sure he's thinking, I could get my hands on him and I could probably put him on his butt. He ain't being Kufertex. Ain't happening. But it'd be cool if they actually had an actual fight for it. Hisaki Hikishimoto gets a victory over Taka, three knockdown rule, all punches on the second round. Let me see. There are some other ones that are kind of more for the locals, prospects that you'll see down the road, prospects that you've probably seen before. But I think I've talked about the main ones that I wanted to talk about on this card for sure. Let me see. We had the EMG Legends card. It just has a couple fights. I'll mention a couple fights from this. I didn't get to see all of the card, but in China, which is producing, China's producing the most consistent world-class kickboxing in the world right now. Glory's still doing their thing once a month. China's doing their thing like once a weekend or once every other weekend. They've got another big-time card. And this, of course, had, you know, the blessing of Top King is also in this. Jovicic gets a victory over Dmitry Veretz. Shout out to Jovicic getting those international opportunities. Yodkumpol gets a victory over Alexander Pisarev. Pisarev actually is pretty talented. I've seen that kid fight a few times. So shout out there. Hanzi Ho defeats Hiroki Tanaka. Let me see what other ones. Zhang Chengyong gets a victory over Halev of Russia, KO 65 kgs. Look out for Zhang down the road as a 65 kg fighter. Those are the most notable. I mean, there's a Cheng Wenchoy gets a victory over Mohamed Galoy. Galoy is a French fighter who I've mentioned before in this show. I think this card is a good mix of Thais winning, Westerners winning, and Chinese fighters winning, which is what you got to have. You can't just have it be all of one thing. Particularly if you're going into, if it's a predominantly Chinese market, because I mean, I know MMA is doing its thing out in China, but not like kickboxing right now. Kickboxing is hot in China. So just wanted to mention a couple of victories from that card, and I will go ahead and move on to the Glory card. Now I got to talk about the whole Glory card. It's definitely one of their down cards for sure, top to bottom. Had some, you know, I won't necessarily say, you know, bad injuries or anything like that, but like, it's just a card where, I mean, there's one bad injury that kind of, you know, mess with a fight card that they, you know, that are there. Excuse me. There's one injury that kind of stepped in the way of a card that they would have liked to have, you know, are in a fight that they would have really promoting that they really wanted to have. But it's just kind of the name of the game. Vigny, there's nothing he could do about his injury. Luis Perry still ready to compete, and they were able to find a guy for him. So let's go ahead and go through the card. I just mentioned these ones quick. Kevin Van Noordstrand, he will go against David Moore in a featherweight bout. These guys are locals who are trying to, you know, get their name out there, and it's going to start with getting these opportunities. It's always going to be a struggle, you know, for the U.S. guys to catch up because we don't have enough fights. So I'm glad they have this opportunity, but if either of them were in the featherweight tournament, I think they would still struggle a bit. Next fight on the card, we got a rematch between Daniel Morales as he takes on Francis Ambang. The problem with Morales is he doesn't have the KO pop for the weight class. He definitely has the slickness. He's got the movements. He can score. Ambang should be able to win this one with his combination and the kick flow. Just a bigger, stronger guy. And they're doing their best to make sure that Ambang is always competing because he is one of the better guys in the U.S. And as far as kickboxing, who's located in the U.S., he's one of the better guys who reflects the, you know, what they want to see, the kickboxing, the low kick flow that they're hoping for. He brings it to the table. So Ambang definitely a guy to, you know, there's a certain level that he should have success over. Morales is that level. Perhaps Morales can, you know, land something slick and score something, maybe score down, change the outcome of the fight. But just because he doesn't offer the KO pop, it'll be tough for him. Still good talent, just can't hurt the guys. And that's why Ambang should get his hand raised. The replacement for Xavier Vinny, as I mentioned before, Anthony McDonald, this should be a KO victory for Chad Lewis Perry. Like, not even close. Perry should be able to, if not the first round, the second round. He's bigger, stronger athlete. Very, very good kickboxer when he lets it go. But usually he just patiently moves around and just lands his, you know, low kicks. He's been fighting in, or he's been training in States for a while at AKA. Made a lot of good friends over there. He was in the corner when I was working the Glory fight. I saw him at the Glory fight because people were asking me to wrap hands. Because normally, like the UFC, they have somebody there. And I think Glory did have someone for wrapping hands, but just a couple people recognized me, so I wrapped their hands. And then I saw him there, and then we talked for a little bit, and I said, hey, man, you know, we were in the back, because when I was with my fighter, Johnny Hendricks, he was in the back with Cormier and them. So he's really, really, in, you know, with Cormier and DC, he loves that experience. He loves being out there in AKA. I don't know if he moved out there full time, but nice guy. And he went out there and scored a KO on that night, and it looks like he's going to come out and score another KO on this night. Just awesome athlete for the weight class, and if he could develop the kickboxing flow and beat elite guys, he's got the personality to do something with it because he's going to talk some trash, and he's got the right kind of arrogance, and you want to see that from a fight. Daniela Gruff and Jessica Gladstone continue the kickboxing tournament for the Glory brand, and Gladstone, the Canadian fighter, I know her kind of more. I've seen, you know, clips from her as far as her, I believe it was some AMI events that I first came across her name, and again, she's decently talented. I think Groff's going to win this fight. I think Groff, of course, is, they have a good system for female fighting over in Germany. There's a lot of good talent. Now, Groff would not have been one of the names that have first popped up for me from Germany as far as kickboxing goes. But a lot of those girls are doing MMA and boxing as well. But Groff is still a solid name. I think Groff will get the victory here. Again, I feel like this tournament is a lesser tournament. Notables that once Iman Barlow and the contract situation didn't work out. And I look at that, and I look at Noah Nissimeksin. You're still missing a lot of the best fighters in the world in this, but this is still a solid tournament. And Groff, it's an okay tournament, I'll say. Groff should get the victory here, and I'm excited to see how this one ends out. And what could be a very, very entertaining fight, Jason Wellness takes on Simon Marcus. Simon Marcus, of course, Thai style, kind of stiff, upright style, plays with the body kicks, plays with the low kicks. He's been his who he is for a while. He usually shoots singles, and when he throws his hands, he's throwing these big hulking. Never really works off of a jab, never really built offense off of, counter-striking and stuff like that. He just bites down and throws that heat, he bites down, throws heat, throws body kicks serious. First time him and Wellness fought, Wellness never got going. It's like Wellness stayed in first gear looking to get combination flow. But in a fight that I thought for sure, I actually think I had Wellness winning the first fight. Like I thought it going into it, like in Dubai, I was like, he's going to win this fight. But the body kicks kept him off from getting to his combination flow. He was able to sidestep him. Really good work. From Marcus, who never let Wellness find his combination flow comfort. I think Marcus is that level of talent to do that again. I think that Wellness, if he can get in front, if he can just forget about trying to make offense happen and make offense happen, Wellness will win. He's got the combination flow to do it. But because he's got these moments where he walks around, he's got these gaps where he's trying to figure things out. Sometimes he'll switch stance here and there. And he can punch hard, but he doesn't have KO pop necessarily. It's really weird. He can't crack. But, Ryan Scully was the first person to bring it up to me. He said he punches so hard you would think there'd be more KOs on his resume. Whatever the case is, Wellness, like his brother, turned himself into one of the best fighters in the world. Probably the number, definitely in the top three of the weight class. I think Simon Marcus' strength and single shots can carry the day for him on the scorecards. But don't be surprised if Wellness gets his hand raised. This is kind of a coin toss for me. Good, good fight. We go into the regular card, and this one will be live. So I believe this is the first one that they ever have 100% live. No delay. If I saw it correctly, I could be wrong. But they say this one should be live. We're going to go into a four-man tournament with a lot of familiar names. Glory got to get some new names, all right? There are a lot of talented guys that, around their 143-pound weight class. There's a lot of talented guys in the world. I'm seeing a lot of the same guys. Giga, Chaibin Lim, and Matt Amory. Every single one of them have fought for the brand on a regular basis. There are talented guys out there. And one thing that you could do is just do what K1 did. Just license your name out for people to do some local. And it would help for you. It would help the Glory brand in the end, get their name out there a little bit more. Get more people interested in it. Because there are still events in Europe. And I mean a lot of events in Europe that are called K1 events. So that's how popular the brand is. K1 doesn't even do a lot of those weight classes anymore. K1 pretty much stays under 70 kgs, and the world still sees that as their preeminent name in kickboxing, despite the fact that Glory's been doing their thing for a few years now. They got to have a system where more guys can get these opportunities. And just use your YouTube page for it, Have somebody put together a card. Glory, whatever, from Uzbekistan or something like that. Let the winner say, hey, this guy qualified for this. Go watch his fights here. That's all you need. But they use a lot of the same names, and it should be interesting to see how this event cracks down despite that, because they're still good fights. We go to the tournament field. Chaibin Lim goes against Matt Embry. Matt Embry has showed that he is sub to the body, as they say in Bloodsport. He struggled with some of the bigger shots that he's taken downstairs. His kickboxing flow actually ain't bad. Lim's not necessarily a guy who goes to the body, but because he's seen Embry get stopped there, he might give it a shot, which is hilarious because Lim actually just got stopped to the body. Last time we saw him, he loses to Masab Amrani, and Masab just kind of blew him out with some body rips. Chaibin Lim's been in the game for a while. He's fighting at this smaller weight class. He also fought at, K1, 70 kgs back when K1 Max was still doing good things. He's a veteran who's been in this game for a while. So shout out to him for getting this opportunity. I think he's got the tools to beat Embry, but I also think Embry's got the tools to beat him. But I'm going to lean towards Lim. I think that his kickboxing throughout can carry today. A little bit more experience and victories over high-level opposition. Embry's a tough kid. I don't think he'll be stopped in this one. I think this should be a good, entertaining kickboxing match that reflects high-level kickboxing, which is very important to me. Adam Chuck versus Giga Chikadze. Sorry, I didn't want to mess up his last name. I was like, why do I keep wanting to say Gaga? Giga Chikadze. Real nice dude. Met him and, you know, when I was in, when I was at the Last Glory event, I was working a corner there. I met him out there. Chikadze is a good dude. Like good, talented kid. Plays with that teep a lot. He has a really quick kind of, his kick to the body doesn't come wide at all. It shoots up from the ground and goes straight to the target. Boxing's pretty smooth. The thing with Adamchuk is just, Adamchuk, if he gets you figured out, he'll be able to score clean counters. If you get him moving in space, he'll be able to run you into offense. He's a very, very good fighter. I've got a slight lean towards Adamchuk, but I wouldn't be surprised if Chikadze landed the scores on the scorecard to get the victory. The kind of scores to get people to take notice of, he's throwing the bigger shots. He's got the most aggression. I think he's the winner. That sort of performance would not surprise me if Chikadze were to win a close fight, because this fight's close in my mind. I see no blowout in any other way or in anyone's favor. This is a close fight. Slight lean towards Adamchuk. I've got him winning, and then I have him, the winner of this match wins the tournament. They will beat Lim or Embry, but I've got Adamchuk beating Lim, and I think Lim will just run into a lot of counters and will be cleanly defeated in the extra round bout. So I've got Adamchuk beating Lim in the 65kg championship. We move on to one of the co-headlining heavyweight match as Hezgi Hegas gets a fight with Gudda and Inocente. I got Hezdy. Hezdy, Inocente fights well in spots. His kickboxing is okay. He's done a good job since he left MMA and pursued kickboxing full-time. Of course, there's the Dennis KO, and he's a solid kickboxer, but his last performance was a step back for me. I was not a big fan, you know, whatsoever. Now, again, everybody, you know, you can have off nights, but I felt like with Brian Doze, he was looking for a special type of KO, are a special type of keg technique, some sort of spinning hook kick, some sort of jumping knee, some sort of, you know, Superman. He's looking for something like that to score and win the victory for him, which made it an ugly performance. Hezdy Hegas is going to go out there and kickbox his ears off for three rounds if it goes that far. He's going to be committed to his game. Combination of low kick, I think he's going to wear Inocente down, and if he doesn't stop him in third, he will win a clear decision. Hezdy Hegas is your winner for me in this bout. And then we go to the main event. I'm told it is not a title fight. I'm told it is a three-round fight between Rico Verheerven and Anderson Broderick Silva. Anderson Broderick Silva, of course, we know. I cannot think of anyone who has fought for the Glory brand more than him, in particular in the last 2 years. They call him all the time, and he's always ready to go. I think that, you know, I'm going to go ahead and check it right now. Glory 2. He's fought as Remy Bonjasky. Glory 2 was his first outing. And here we are on Glory, you know, New Jersey. And he's coming off a victory over Gordon Hopp. He lost to Ishmael Lant before that. He beat Morris Green before that. Lost to Ben Sadek, a fight that he's winning. And he lost to Errol Zimmerman before that. So he's a guy who's like, clearly, this would not be my pick for a title fight. So if it's not a title fight, I'm happy. But Rico Verheerven is a guy who they have under contract, and they're trying to keep happy because a lot of people want him. You know, Bellator wants him for both kickboxing and MMA. He sees the popularity that MMA guys have gotten. Maybe he wants to try that too, despite the fact that he is the heavyweight champion of the world in kickboxing. It's one of the more prominent positions to be in combat sports. It's got a lot of history with it, you know, whether it's Jimmy Shelton or Remy Bonjasky or Peter Arts or Ernesto Hoost or Andy Hoog, that spot in the martial arts world and the combat sports world has always been really, really important. Verheerven is the man on top there. Verheerven wins this one. Silva, he just has moments where I think Silva should just stay with kickboxing and low kicks, and he just abandons them and he moves around and he looks for big hands upstairs. He's always been chinny. Verheerven is going to work those legs. He's going to work the inside and outside of both of your legs. One of the few guys who can fire that power. His power leg, your inside rear leg. He's one of the few guys who can work combos and score that kick without hitting you in the groin. Just a very, very good fighter. This is him staying sharp. And then, of course, the big one goes down. They've announced it. It's going to go down in Germany. They're going to have a huge card December 10th where him and Badahari are going to do the damn thing. Gokhan Saki's back in training. Look like he's going to be on that card. So all good stuff coming for the end of the year in kickboxing. Kickboxing in November and December is going to be hot. K1's got World Grand Prix. Kunlun's got big events. And then, of course, we know what's going down with kickboxing on December 10th. So good stuff. Thanks, everybody, for following the podcast show. Check these fights out. ESPN in the States is going to have it. UFC Fight Pass is going to have the Marco Wilnes main event. Watch the combat sports, you guys. Really support our kickboxers. You know, take the time and watch some of the best athletes in the world do their thing. Thank you all very much for following the show. I'll be back. My summer series will return next year. Summer isn't officially over till September 20th, so I'm going to do one every week to round off the series. But this year, I promised I'd do it. I've been doing it some. I'm going to make sure I finish strong. You know, next week, I think I'll even do two in one episode. So thank you very much for listening. Peace. God bless. And everybody have a good one.